Welcome to, what is it, 2020 AC, after COVID, as I call it. And this has obviously been a very sad time for a lot of people who can't bring home all the money that they need to sustain their families. It's even a worse time for people whose incomes have been totally obliterated. And there are two things you can do about this. You can cry about it. You can probably drink yourself to a standstill. Or you can look at, what am I going to do next? And I think what this crisis has done, it's got a lot of people to rethink and test assumptions that used to be relevant prior to COVID-19. And one of the industries hardest hit by this is the tourism industry. And I know Siso Ntshona he actually comes from a corporate background. So he's not one of those people who, you know, ended up moving from government to government to government. So he brings a really fresh perspective to SA tourism. So Siso, good to have you back on.
You're going to get me fired again, kiddo.
Yes. Oh, what have I done this time? No. Last time, I think they learnt their lesson.
Yeah. So just say it's 2020 DC, not 2020 AC.
Did I say AC?
DC during COVID. I think that's the reality that is with us for some time.
DC. I've obviously been working on some of the electronics at home. I get confused. But Siso, we've obviously chatted a couple of times, as we do, and you've spoken about these series of engagements that you've had with industry to ready itself. And, you know, part of that was, okay, if we're only going to open up in level 2 and level 1, how do we bring ourselves and make ourselves more relevant for level 3, level 4, and level 5, whatever that reality could be in a space of time. How's that all panned out? Where is SA Tourism today, you know, as a result of some of those discussions as an industry?
Absolutely. Thanks for the chance again, Kina, to chat.
Pleasure.
You're absolutely right. Is that, you know, when we started off the conversations, tourism only kicked in at level 1 and a little bit of level 2, essentially. Now, the whole challenge and engagement with the sector was to say, well, we can sit back and cry and drink ourselves to a stupor, or we can actually look at ways of de-risking the sector so that we can move up a level. And, you know, the sector really came through in a very, very big world. We received over 3,000 submissions with suggestions, proposals. And it was just so nice to see. It was no longer complaining. It was about saying, here's what we can do. Here's what we can implement, you know, in order to get us up there. The other big lesson for us was that, you know, tourism has been aggregated into one thing for a very long time. And we split it up into subsectors because each subsector poses a different risk, and thus a different mitigant needs to come through on that side. So where we're at the moment is that tourism has been re-rated from a level 1-2 operation to a level 3, right? Now, where we're at as we speak is that tourism is open. However, it's being eased in slowly, and only business travel is allowed.
Yes.
Now, many have come back to me and said, listen, it's not enough. We need leisure tourism, and we also need international. I fully agree that it is not enough, but we have to take our victories one small step at a time.
Yeah.
And what it does, when we do open up, it gives confidence to me and you, and also to the traveling public out there, that you are able to board an aircraft. It is safe. There is no capacity restrictions, and further down the line. So we are literally every 2 weeks making a plea for more of the sector to open up as we get confidence that we are able to, you know, open up the sector safely.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and we were talking about hyper-localization and the benefits thereof. And, you know, so you might have a hotel that serves two or three neighborhoods in a particular area where you could actually organize transport from the home to the hotel. So people who want to have a bit of a getaway. You do partnerships with other businesses in that particular area. So maybe people want to go and spend a weekend at the beach. Why can't they go to a hotel? And you, what you do is you provide them. And I've tried it before, not now, obviously. But I decided to try and have a holiday in my own city. But start hyper-locally. It took me 10 minutes to get to the hotel. You know, I went to a local restaurant. I went to here, I went to there. And can't we start there by saying, hey, what can you do in your immediate community to allow people to come and do great specials for them so that they can get out of the house, maybe have a wonderful dinner, but everybody's 1.5 meters apart, for example? I mean, is the level of thinking going in that direction?
100%. I think we're absolutely aligned in that thinking. It is the complementary services that are triggered as a result of that. So, for instance, I'm meaning things like interprovincial travel. Mm. I mean, I had a business that called me, I think, on Monday and said, listen, we actually have our establishment. Half of it is in Gauteng, half of it is in Northwest, right? Mm. So does that mean now we can't have people traveling across different places then? The second one is that once you do that, you've got to make sure that you are also clear and consistent with your guidelines, because leisure is a very open kind of activity. You can either be at that lodge that you speak of, five bedrooms, which is quite quaint, or it can be at a 500-bedroom beachfront hotel in Durban, as an example, right? Mm. Those two pose very different risks, but they cater to the leisure side. But the complementary stuff that I speak about is that you've got to make sure that you've got your transportation protocols sorted so they are consistent. You also have to look at things like catering. So what happens with the restaurants? Right now, restaurants are not able to do sit-down, right?
Yeah.
So you now go to this exclusive lodge that is lovely over there. What does that mean? Can't they serve you dinner, or do you have to go pick up from your room to the lounge?
You can go and have a picnic, man, outside on the lawn. I mean, do something different.
think that's, you know, so that's the, I suppose, the next level of detail. And the difficulty with government is they've got to find guidelines that offer a bit of clarity, but not to the extent that they're now dictating what color socks to wear, as an example.
Oh, listen, you know? I mean, they've already crossed that one.
Eh? Yeah, and I think there now is unfortunately, some people, if the guidelines are too vague, you know, they'll drive a wedge in between and kind of
take liberties.
Something else, you know. And what is happening now? The drive is to actually appeal to the tourism industry players themselves, because, for instance, these protocols that you speak of that have been implemented, right? They are been designed and developed by the sector, and number two, more importantly, they are self-regulating, right?
Yes.
So it's not government coming in that says you will do X, Y, and Z, and all of the players are signing a pledge that says, listen, I fully understand where the country is at, and I pledge to actually operate my business in a very clear, health-conscious environment that I don't put anyone at risk. So it's not just chasing profits, but making sure we can deliver the experience, but also look after it as well. And I think once you hand more responsibility to the sector, that's where, to me, the magic starts to happen, as opposed to dictating line by line.
Exactly, exactly. Like wear a T-shirt under a top and then you can buy it. But we won't go there. I won't even ask you to comment on that, Cesar. But I'm thinking about the Airbnb spaces around. Now, some of them are business ready. Right. Mm. So you've got people who don't want staff to work from the office because everybody's you got 3,000 people in one building.
Mm.
But you could also make those business friendly Airbnbs available to for business people to use. And obviously the proper protocols need to be followed, where one person can use it for a week when they're traveling. And as opposed to only the hotel option, for example.
Okay. So let me put it this way, right? So the question that we ask the sector is, there are these protocols. How are you going to ensure that you actually implement them, right? And typically, there'll either be an owner, if it's a small business, or a general manager, if it's a big one, right, that says, I will ensure that these protocols are actually implemented. And if something goes wrong, you can come and throttle my neck, essentially.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, we've got to find the equivalent level of comfort and assurance within the Airbnb space.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You know, so therefore, if you put your house up to Airbnb, right, does that mean you take personal responsibility like the GM does or the owner of the lodge does?
Yep.
to make sure that each and every single visit there's actually fumigation and.
But you can get a fumigation certificate, for example, where you have to load that latest fumigation certificate on there, just like they check everything else in Airbnb. Do you have a smoke detector? Do you have this? Do you have that? You could potentially, you know, with object recognition and all that other chickies, you can basically get people to comply, upload photographs, etc. And there's also people who would be using those facilities that would be able to report in as to whether or not people and businesses are compliant.
And I think that's probably where we need to get to give confidence, to the regulator government itself, that these will be followed, but also more importantly to the traveler, me, you, my brother, my sister, that they are able to consume an Airbnb as an example, and the following protocol will be put in place. It's about finding the right mix between compliance and also moral persuasion, I call it, right? And, as I say, in a hotel, there is someone whose job is to make sure that, you know, these protocols are followed. In Airbnb, it can get a bit gray, right? Because who's responsible? Is it Airbnb in San Francisco? Or is it the owner, CISA, over here, who's never there, you know? Mm. And then I think that's some clarity over there. But ultimately, it's about just assurance and confidence that, the health will be prioritized and everything else there.
Well, you know what? I'm glad that you've managed to get yourselves up to level 3. I mean, some people are going to have to look at it going, do I do game drives with one person in the car or two?
Yeah.
Is it going to be economically viable? Am I going to stay open? Am I not? I know there are killers of this world. I heard them this morning saying that, well, you know, certain things aren't viable. So we need to make sure that when we activate staff and resources, that we actually see some income coming in and that we don't overload operations without your sort of gross income at least being something to give you hope. So
it's a dress rehearsal.
Yes, it is.
And I think as each week goes by, it's about getting more confidence, and then you'll start to see things relaxing a bit as more and more refining and learning and as to how to, you know, execute tourism in a COVID environment.
Well, Sisa and Sona, always great chatting to you. We'll have many more of these discussions as things develop and, as the innovations kick in. But it's always good. I mean, I think we live in exciting times, but at the same time, pretty sad times. Exciting in the sense that it forces us, gives us a kick up the bum to do things that we should have done a long time ago. Sad because people are still struggling through it. But thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we're watching the world as well, you know, where we're seeing examples of successes and a bit of failures, and just to make sure that South Africa is not forgotten. So that's we're keeping our mind on that.
Just one thing. I mean, we're chatting to Ravi Radhisson a bit later, obviously COO for Tsoho. They're opening up 4 hotels. Oh, a lot of these businesses now moving to touchless technologies where you don't have to touch a thing, where you now can book in remotely without having to even potentially see someone?
It will certainly be in the competitive advantage to do that. Mm. And I think the consumer who actually holds the wallet will probably lean towards the ones that actually have as less contact as possible.
Yeah. Well, listen, well done. I mean, you've shown, I think, great leadership within the sector. I've seen some of the documents you guys have produced. I've seen some of the insights. And that's the level and the standard that we need across the board. So, Sisa Ntshona, CEO of SA Tourism. Have a wonderful day.